sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
We choose directly who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
Who I am, exactly. Well, I am Will Bluewater, and my trusty sidekick, Mark the Badger Borcherding, is with us as usual, and boy, it just wouldn't be this show without you guys. you're the organization to my disorganization. But yeah, I just astounded at your insight. You know what's really going to be fun is when Carl Kalaman goes on. I mean, that's going to be interesting because what Carl said too, I wasn't even aware. I mean, there's different brands of Mayanism, and anyway, I corresponded with him by email years ago. We talked about getting him on the program, and so he and I haven't met, but we're on close enough terms that I can call him Boyka, you know, which is a term of endearment, So anyway, we'll scheduled to appear this evening, rumored to be scheduled to appear this evening, is Pat Vegas of Redbone, the legendary Yaqui, Shoshone, and Aztec musician. He said, in a quote, in a time machine, I'd like to go back to the 70s when music was real music. And I agree with him because I was involved with a singing group that goes back to the mid-60s and call Up With People, and everybody agrees that music of 1970, 71, 72, 3, you know, the early to mid 70s was the best music ever. Stuff does happen, and we might not be able to get a hold of. Tell you what, let's try and dial him up one more time and see if we can get him on, because stuff does happen. He messaged me, but I'm not exactly sure when. I should have gone back and looked. But Mark Boogaloo set this up, and I was just too lazy to.
Maybe he got his time zones wrong or something.
Yeah. Or maybe I was just too lazy to call him 24 hours before the show.
Yeah.
Regardless, or you never know, he may be on his way to the hospital. But you just never know. We regret to inform you guys, if you don't already know, and I'm going to turn this over to Mark because he was so close to Grandfather Martin. And go ahead and if you got anything on your heart, go ahead and share it.
Well, he crossed over very late Friday night, about. So, which was sort of expected, but his, of course, being me, I immediately jumped on and looked at what it indicates, because as well as doing birth readings, you can also do a death reading, too.
Yeah.
And when you have the birth and the death, both, then you can do essentially a life reading. So you can combine them together. And that gives you different aspects. And a birth reading kind of tells you where they came in at, sort of what they're doing. Death reading kind of tells you how they wrapped up things and what they might be doing in the future. And you know, where, especially where they might be showing up to, you know, give guidance or sometimes it's where they might be going, you know, or sometimes in some cases it kind of points you to a certain like star system that they may have had roots in. Well, actually, the births can do that too, but you do the births and death together, and it kind of gives you an overall perspective, you know, on their life. And one of the ones that was interesting, and I did that in both the regular Mayan Zolk'in and also the new Six Sun Zolk'in. I did it both for Grandfather Martin. In a normal Mayan Zolk'in, his birth and his death, when they come together, they unify into a nine eek, which
wow.
is Blue Water's day sign. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
And well, it's and nine eek is all about Quetzalcoatl. And
right,
from
it's
what you tell, yeah.
Well, it's also the symbol, if you look at a lot of the, it's kind of a T-cross symbol, and if you go down there in the Maya land and different places, actually here in the United States, too, in the Pueblos, you'll see a, in the United States, it's often a very narrow T, except for at Great Kiva at Chaco Canyon, it's a pretty normal T-cross there. The other ones in the Pueblos, sometimes the top T can be very, very narrow, so you may not even notice it at first. But if you go down to Mexico, you'll also see basically T-cross windows.
Yeah.
Where the wind moves through it. And but it also, that's T hieroglyphically in a lot of the cultures in their hieroglyph or symbolic language, the T would mean underground.
Hmm.
So it connects to the underground. When you look at the T, you could also interpret it as the top of the T being the ground, and then the part of the T that goes up and down, you can interpret that as going into the ground, or you could also interpret it as the Hopi Sipapu.
Yeah.
No. So there's actually quite a bit to that particular symbol, but Grandfather Martin's death in around Mayan Zolk'in is pointing towards purification. And then, now I also did his birth and death readings in the Six Sun Zolk'in, which I'd done his birth reading before, but did his death reading. And it was really amazing because the new Zolk'in has an uncanny ability to zero in on connections and relationships. And this wasn't any exception. It was connected all over the place into all the other Hopi elders.
Yeah.
Give an example, his death. The other Hopi that he was associated with, Dan Evahama.
Uh-huh.
And Dan Evahama's death and Grandfather Martin's death are in the same cycle, and they're exactly at the counterbalancing point to each other. So if you took a Mayan 13-day cycle, and you say day 1 balances with day 13, day 2 with day 12, and they go into the center, which is 7, and it mirrors or balances itself because it's the center. Well, Den of Ahama, Hopi Elder, would be on one side, and on the exact other opposite side on the balancing point is Grandfather Martin.
Wow.
Then, on the other, that's on the forward flow. Oh, no, that's the unity flow time. Then on the backward flow, so this is more has to do with their future. His death was connected to Dan Jagamba. Katachangva, I can't remember his name. I've never heard that name pronounced, and I didn't know him. So he died. He was one of the really original of the ones back in the 1940s. He was one of those that was given the task of starting to bring out the prophecies and stuff. And I think he was also one of the ones that was a conscientious objector and put him in jail. And his birth, his death and Grandfather Martin's death was an exact match, a dead hit on that one thing.
Wow.
On one part. Yeah, and what's interesting about that one is it literally connects back to Teotihuacan Spider-Woman and all that, too.
Keep talking. I'll be right back. I go grab my cell phone.
Okay. So that was an exact match for Grandfather Martin. Grandfather Martin's birth is actually going to connect in as a direct hit with Mac Boogaloo, who scheduled some of the guests for this show. I mean, an exact match to the day. So that was an interesting connection. So we basically have Grandfather Martin's connecting the 9-8 to Blue Water, and then also to Mac Boogaloo, who's doing the some of the scheduling for guests for the show. So
I'm back.
Yeah, that I was just explaining to him how Grandfather Martin's birth and Mac Boogaloo, who schedules the guests for the show, their births actually have a dead hit match too. So there were a huge, just an amazing number of connections that I was seeing with Grandfather Martin's passing. All kinds of things were popping up. So, and then also Thomas Banyaka. His death is actually is a direct hit with Grandfather Martin, and the same one that Grandfather Martin and Mac Boogaloo match on. That's also a direct match.
Wow.
So there were a lot of very interesting connections. It turned out the first time I visited Grandfather Martin, the day I actually visited him, turned out to be in the Zulcan was his birthday. I happened to visit him on his birthday in the Zulcan.
Wow.
Which was pretty interesting timing. So yeah, I think probably later on we'll see more about this whole thing with his passing. I think there's some a little bit more to the timing to it than we are aware of now. So I think in the future we'll look back on it and we'll probably understand a little bit more about what actually happened and transpired around this point in time. Hindsight will always be better, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah, it was amazing, all the connections with all the other elders. And I haven't looked at all of them yet, but those three, Dan Avahama, Thomas Banyaka, and Dan Ketchuangwa, those three I already looked at, and they were very connected. Two of them were direct hits. I mean, they were exactly the same. And then Dan Alhamas was just a counterbalancing thing, which sort of made sense. But then you go back and you look at the history of all of that particular lineage and group of elders that were, you know, out of Araby and Hopeville, and, you know, you go back and look at all the different things that happened. And one of the things that appears that there was a breakage there when Yukiyama died, the guy that was the leader of the original leader of all the you know, what they called the hostiles, the traditionalists.
Yeah. Yep.
Hostile to the government.
Yeah, the church.
And, you know, when he died, there was a little bit of a thing on the transition. And his immediate son that kind of took over. So when that occurred, the Firestone tablet went to him. And according to some of the Hopi, they felt that at that around that point of time, or shortly thereafter, they felt that that tablet should have been given over moved from the Fire Clan to the Spider Clan.
Mm-hmm.
And that apparently didn't happen. So, and it's kind of hard to tell because, you know, they all have their own stories and what, you know, what they think is a good idea and not. So you're not sure exactly, you know, there's a bunch of different religious politics and stuff that can get involved, and everybody has their own, you know, story in the clans. So, yeah, sometimes it's pretty hard to figure out what's really going on.
Yeah. Well, Hopi didn't believe in war. But, you know, they didn't believe in war, but they sure would believe in pushing you out. And that's exactly what they did, you know.
Yeah.
Right after that, you know, one group just literally got together and just pushed the other.
Well, they did go to war at one time with the one, Atfali, the one that was predominantly, you know, kind of accepted more the Christian way. I mean, they attacked their own town there, groups of them, and, you know, it wasn't like, you know, they were all buddy-buddy or anything, so it wasn't quite that bad, but, you know, it was groups of supposedly, you know, Hopi going after other Hopi, and they literally destroyed the town.
Wow.
You know, what I forget, it was spelled A-T-O-W-I or something like that. But, yeah, they wiped it out. And, yeah, so that was the one time where we know there was a kind of a blemish on the fact that, you know, they're supposed to go around fighting and killing and stuff, because they certainly did it there.
Yeah.
So they're, but, you know, it goes back to most people don't realize that they're not necessarily a real super cohesive integrated group is what most people seem to think.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's right.
They're a group of people, clans and stuff, some of them with some real kind of different backgrounds, you know, culturally. And they kind of integrated to some extent, and they have some basic similarities, and they would try to integrate the any differences or anything. And so they aren't quite as, you know, it's not like there's just this one kind of Hopi. And
yeah.
The clan system is, and this is probably true of a lot of other tribes, sometimes the clan system is very good, and sometimes it becomes a big problem. You know, they get to politics and this and that, and all kinds of stuff goes on. So.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it can be extremely good, but it can also have its dark side, too. And you see that kind of in the Hopi when they start talking about, you know, things like witches and witchcraft. And, you know, saying that these other people are doing it, whether they are or not, you know, you don't know. So, yeah, it's pretty hard to go through and discern afterwards, what really is going on here. I think the one thing you can figure out, though, that's pretty clear is that the traditionalists were trying to maintain their way of life, like most groups of people all over the planet. And the guys that want to take over everything figured out how to, screw them over. So that part of the story, I think, that's pretty clear.
Yeah.
And there's not much interpretation there. They beat you up, steal your stuff, and do all kinds of stuff, put you in jail, rob you, or do whatever, like they did to most of the other people, including, most of the Americans that, think that they're going to be on the better end of the stick, which they're not. And a lot of Native peoples warned them, right? They said, the things that they're doing to us right now, they're going to be doing it to you later.
Yeah.
And that's coming true. It's been probably coming true for quite a while. It's just people didn't realize it. So,
A friend of mine, years back, went to the governor of Missouri and invited people from all over the state to come and talk about Indian issues. And he stood right up and said, "Hey, you might as well work with us. We might as well work with you because we're all," and he used the N-word, "now. We're all now."
Yeah.
Comes to fruition, then they'll all learn about what it's like to be Indians, and running without electricity, learn how to really live roughly if they need to, Who knows? Well, I did text Pat Vegas, and I haven't heard anything back. You never know what'll happen sometimes, and if we got anybody out there listening live, now would be a real good time to call in, and maybe get a free Mayan birth reading from Mark, and other than that, let's just wind up Mark a little bit more. We'll just picture a great big giant key, and we'll just stick it in an imaginary hole in Mark's back, and we'll just turn it 2-3 times, we'll wind up Mark, and we've had some requests, to hear more from you, so hey, here's a good opportunity. So what else is? How's your weather there north of Denver?
Well, we got snow last night.
Yeah, that's what they said was going to happen.
Which is not super unusual. I mean, we can get it anywhere up, till about
June.
Right now. If it was, not really. June probably would be a little bit late, But up till mid-May, you could sort of, it's not going to happen that often, like every 3 or 4 years or so, but it's not real unusual, It has been really wet. I mean, it's rained almost every day, I think, for 9 days now.
Well, we moved into a house at 8,100 feet at Crestone, and it was it was March, okay, and that was earlier, third week in March. And boy, I'll tell you what, it was 17 below, 10 below every night. they had got the word up there at 8,000 feet that it was actually springtime.
Yeah.
But I loved living up there. I wish I was back in Colorado. It's a great place. And got some good friends I'd love to see out there again. Jimmy Ten Rivers and that bunch of crazy guys and girls. They were told they've been sitting there at Walsenburg ever since the Spanish got here. They were descendants of band of Chiricahuas and related to Geronimo, and so they married into the Spanish population when they came, but they kept their own beliefs, and you know, Jimmy could take you right to the spot where the conquistadors had a battle with Indian, you know, right on this giant alluvial plain, and you know, he'd take you and show you the middle of nowhere, you know, the Spanish helmets look like turtles and all that stuff, and really interesting. But so what do you know that's good?
Well, we seem to have a continuing stuff with our planet.
Mm.
You know, Hawaii got hit by some earthquakes yesterday. We had one up in Michigan. There were repeats in Nepal. There was one over in, I think there's some, oh, one of the volcanoes over in Japan. And so we seem to have had quite a bit of lingering energy from there at the end of March. So that's been kind of interesting how it's kept going. That's a little bit different. And there was a guy out of Japan that's saying, I forget what his name is. He's a kind of a leading expert there in Japan, and he's saying that, you know, Japan is entering an era of great quakes and eruptions.
Wow.
So he seems to be telling them, you know, you guys, you know, better start getting ready here. It doesn't say exactly, you know, if he has any other inside information or what. He seems to be just basing it upon their track record so far. I suspect he probably has some other knowledge and information too. So I think there's more and more people been thinking about that. You know, when you mentioned the thing about Colorado, remind me years ago back in the late 80s, there was all these maps going around, like the Scallion map, and
oh, yeah.
And there was one called the Nostradamus map, and there was the I Am America map.
Yeah.
And then there was two or three others. And you know, most of them showed, you know, the East Coast, Florida and California getting hit and stuff coming up, basically flooding up the Mississippi River Valley. So, you know, some of them, no, not too much, and other ones were pretty extensive flooding. In one of them, you know, basically, you know, the Hopi, if that one came true, the Hopi would probably be migrating to Colorado.
Yeah.
But I always thought it. I thought, you know, well, you know, they talked about the water coming up to their mesas, right?
Yep.
I always thought, well, you know, if that happened and the water didn't subside very fast, you're not going to stay up on top of that mesa for very long because you can't farm up there.
Yeah.
All the farming's down below. Be underwater. So.
Yeah.
I think they'd have to move now. Whether they'd go live with the ant people again, I don't know. I guess that's a possibility.
Well, yeah, you know, it's could do worse.
Well, it's worked for them, I guess, two times now out of the, what, how many time transitions, so I guess
four.
They could go for it again.
Yeah.
So, like, they seem to be getting in the habit of doing that, so it would be believable they'd do it again.
Yeah, it's just amazing that the Hopi have got that cultural memory of something that, you know, a rabbi would So yeah, this world's been plowed over several times, and it has to do with the first letter of the Torah being B rather than A. And, I mean, that's sort of the first lesson they teach you when you you get to Genesis or Bereshit is what they call it. And I got an email from Barry Chamish. Interesting fellow. Have you ever heard Barry? Did an interview with him a couple years back. James did an interview with him.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting guy. You know, basically, because of his exposing certain deep, dark, political, murder type stuff in Israel, they run him out, and he lives in Jacksonville. But
yeah.
he's an IDF veteran and Orthodox, and that's saying something, Orthodox Jew. And it takes concentration to conduct yourself like they do. And anyway, what we'll do is we'll hang around for another half hour, and it may have been a time problem. Shoot, he may have laid down, took a nap, and turned his phone off, and that's fine, whatever. And but it's Mother's Day. What can you say? What'd you do for Mother's Day?
Well, I took Mom out and sat around and had some lunch and chatted kind of about the things going on, state of the world.
Mm-hmm.
My mom knows most of the stuff going on, pretty knowledgeable.
Yeah.
So she pretty much knows the score and all of it. So there were a few other people, though, when we were sitting there chatting, apparently I wasn't paying much attention, but she said, hey, there's a few people looking at us. I guess they were listening to some of the stuff I was saying, and kind of wondered, I don't know
really?
If they agreed or disagreed, but yeah, my mom, this one guy in particular, my mom said, he's been staring at us for how long? I didn't know if it was good, bad, or indifferent. I think she thought he was...
Venue, what kind of a venue were you at?
Huh?
It's like
a natural food store.
Oh,
you're
talking to your mom at the store. And
yeah.
This guy starts giving
you... Well,
they
have a place in there. It's kind of like a coffee shop and icy stuff and, yogurt drinks and all that. And they make over there, and you can go in there and eat, So we're just sitting in there chatting.
So see, she notices that some guy sitting two tables over is giving you the Italian red eye.
Yeah, I think my impression, she didn't say anything particular, but my impression is she didn't seem to like it. It wasn't like a curious agree with me type thing. She felt there was something, more negative about it. It's the impression I get from the way she said it. And I was saying, I guess. I don't know. But,
well, the guy might have just been, he might have been wincing trying to really listen real hard, People can get straight to their faces. And so at least she was self-conscious about it.
He was pointed where she could see him. No, he was to my back. So she was more.
So the guy ever say anything or?
No. He got up and left after a while, and she was saying that as he kind of walked out, she made a comment about him. And she's probably right. She's kind of had some interesting experiences. I know one time she said she was with her sister, and they were looking out their window, right, at her sister's house, and both her and her sister saw this, not just her. and said they saw a guy walking across outside that was dressed in a Civil War outfit. Now,
wow.
I've heard stories similar to this before where people would, they would just see something, and sometimes it would not just be one person, it would be several people see it. I remember this case where this one lady and her friends were, they were in France somewhere, I forget what city, and they turned this corner, and all of a sudden they were looking at something out of the 1700s.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting about, this is documented in a book, I forget now which one, I think it may be in, maybe it's in Talbot's book, The Holographic Universe. It might be in there, I'm not sure. But, I think that's where it's at. But what was interesting in their case was they noticed certain things about what they saw, right? They were able literally to go back and find in records and figure out what it was they saw, the date and everything, based upon certain things that they saw. They were able to figure out when they think that actually was.
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably right. So there's these cases, you know, where people, there seems to be some kind of anomaly where people literally see or step back into past. You know, something, you know, some rip or ripple in the space-time or something, and they just pop the tube slide open in some kind of portal or whatever you want to call it, and they're actually seeing that, because I've heard this from several people. Some of it I read about, but like in my mom's case, and her sister literally saw it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember hearing a story here recently that some couple, I don't know if it was up in Missouri or somewhere here in the middle section of the United States. I think this story's probably still on the internet. I think it's just been a couple months ago. They literally had a cannonball come through their house.
Whoa.
And, you know, they're running people out with cannonballs doing, you know, like reenactments or anything. Of course, they wouldn't be shooting live cannonballs anyway. So, you know, I guess apparently, you know, if you have one of these time anomalies, you can actually, your house can get hit with a cannonball.
Wow.
So, I think there's a lot more.
That's wild.
Mac just posted a message here to me. He says, I don't know what happened to Pat. I talked to him 2 days ago.
Okay.
So, I guess.
Yeah, I'll send him a message. I'll just say, cool. We sent him a message to join if he could. Okay. All right.
So, yeah, there seems to be, you know, all kinds of interesting, you know, possibilities that can occur in our reality that, you know, people have experienced these things, not just one person, but people all over the place. And trying to figure out, you know, why that occurs. Kind of like that one scene in the movie The Matrix, remember when they're going out and Neo sees the cat walking across?
Uh-huh.
And he
yeah.
sees it walking across again?
Yeah.
He says, deja vu. And I think it was Trinity. He says, what did you say? And he says, well, that cat. And it says, and they say, uh-oh. You know?
Yeah.
So, it's kind of... That what these other people are saying kind of reminds me of that scene in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I was watching that not too long ago. That's our guest that we had a while back I was reading up on her, what she won in court as far as her rights to the Matrix.
Yeah.
She's got a $3 billion lien against Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And a bunch of other people, you know, over the rights to that. They figure there was at least $10 billion that was made on that deal. And You know, and she was also, you know, awarded $316,000 for attorney's fees. I don't know if she ever saw a penny of that. But, interesting. Sophia Stewart. God bless her. And, it's amazing. You know, and the movie producers, they did the same thing to Dr. Rogers, friend who had gone down into Peru back in the 30s and looking for a cure for cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And, somebody approached them with a script, and a couple years later, here comes Sean Connery out for the, you know, playing the medicine man. And, Dr. Ferguson. And these are real people. And, but if everybody knew the real story, you know, how he went and talked with Jimmy Carter, and Jimmy says, "Oh, well, we got to have your medicine here in the U.S. I don't know who got called, but they weren't friendly to Dr. Ferguson, and they shadowed him and intimidated him, and who knows? It may have just been corporate types. You don't know. And, you know when somebody's messing with you. And but anyway, yeah, Dr. Rogers is getting his practice up and running again. Because of the violence in Matamoros, it's been shut down for a while. But so if you got cancer, know somebody that does, you might want to check out doctorofhope.com and all kinds of information there about cancer, how to avoid it, how to treat it. And, if you're stage 4 cancer, don't wait till you're stage 4 and got 2 weeks to live. Like the one guy, one guy went to his clinic. I mean, they literally had to, it was in a taxi cab, and he collapsed when he got there, you know, and a couple hours later, he was feeling better, and a few days later, walking around, and, you know, he's alive to this day, and it's just amazing. Yeah, and it's not very expensive. And
no, it's not that difficult. They just got everybody fooled. It's like all the other stuff. You know, if you don't know anything, it's pretty easy to get fooled.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, but when you look around and see all of it, it's really pretty unbelievable. The even sadder part, though, is this is one of the things I was talking to my mom about, was, you know, how you can go up and tell people about different things that are going on in the world, you know, about their money, about their health, you know, about everything. And, you know, he would think, you know, if you tell them how they're being screwed over, this, that, and the other, every way possible, you know, they might be interested in how to prevent it. But a lot of these people, you know, they don't listen. They won't listen at all. Spend any effort to even think, contemplate the possibility of what you're telling them. And I told my mom, I said, well, you know, the Hobie elders gave a perfect description of these people and said they'd be eating, dancing, talking around, doing all this stuff, but they're dead. So.
Yeah.
Dead people can't listen to you, even if you're telling them something that may help them. And, you know, when you look at some of these people, they fit that description, you know, it's just unbelievable. You would think that, you know, you tell them, hey, you know, here's how you can help yourself. And they're so entranced and so mesmerized and brainwashed or whatever that they can't even consider these other possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
They can't even internalize and hear it. And you're sitting there going, my God, you know, I'm sitting there trying to help you, guy, and you're not even going to listen. Well, you know, you feel sorry for them, You know, but on the other hand, you figure, well, if they don't listen, they deserve what they get, right? But they're not really capable of listening. So it's not 100% their fault.
They don't have ears to hear.
That's right. Yeah. It, how do you get the boards out of their ears? Or it's like what Wallace Black Elk used to say, you know, you need to get the sticks out of your ears.
Mm-hmm.
So you can hear, get the blockages out. That was one of his sayings.
Mm-hmm.
Get the sticks out of your, instead of getting the sticks out of your eye, right, you get them out of your ears.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, and that's the reason why after they killed Custer, the women went up with awls, you know, they're kind of almost like ice picks, and they started punching holes in his ears because they wanted to make damn sure in the next life that he listened to them.
Yeah. Well, it's really, when you look at all this stuff, it's really unbelievable. You really have a hard time believing that it's been this easy for him to pull the wool over everybody's eyes. You know, it's just it's just unbelievable. And then you go back and you can kind of gain a better understanding when you see this. And then you start to go back and you gain a better understanding of what some of these Native elders a long time ago were trying to communicate. But they had a problem. They didn't speak English. Or if they did, that was very, you know, sparse. And, you know, they were doing the best they could to try to take an idea and communicate that idea, you know, across a cultural boundary and a language boundary and a spiritual boundary. You have how many boundaries you have to get through to try to communicate your information to this other person to try to get them to where they can understand. So that gap or chasm was pretty wide. How do you build that bridge and get it to where those other people can understand what you're trying to tell them? And so you got to give them credit. They tried, but it was just such a tremendous difficulty to overcome. It's pretty hard, right, to overcome all those barriers and get the message through into the other person's ear where they can actually understand what they're trying to tell them. Now, in hindsight, we can look, for some of us, we could look back and say, oh, yeah, that's what they're trying to say here. You know, we'd understand it. But, you know, back then, you can imagine the difficulty of what they were trying to accomplish, you know. So kind of sympathize with them. You know, look at, it's not just like the Hopi. Look at a lot of the tribes, some of their best communicators that really were trying to help out, you know, and warn people and say, here's the problem, right?
Hey, I thought I'd give Mike Briscoe a call. It's a blind call. I have no idea whether Mike is there or not. And that's Mark's phone ring. Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
Mike,
yeah.
Briscoe. Yes, Will Blue Otter.
What's going on?
Oh, you're on the air. Sucker. I gotcha. Hey, I thought I'd give you a call. Our guest is currently indisposed. The guy, Pat Vegas of Redbone. You know, the Witch Queen of New Orleans and Come and Get Your Love and Maggie and was going to come on tonight. But anyway, we might not be able to get in touch with him. So I thought, hey, I'll give you a call and maybe get in on a little bit of ONAC news. You know, what's going on around with... we won't call it gossip, but we'll stay away from anything that might hurt anybody's feelings. But other than malicious type stuff, what have you heard? What's going on?
Well, you watch the same sites I do. I mean, we both are hearing the same stuff.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting. Dennis Payne apparently got into some kind of a confrontation with, I guess there's a chapter of Grand Governing Council AIM, and
yeah.
And they're very pro federal recognized Indians, you know, and so you know they go on and they go on a gossip site which nobody believes, and then they believe it, you know. So, but they're always looking spoiling for a fight. And, you know, maybe that's the reason why the Hopi elder said, look, you know, there just shouldn't be a lot of activism. And but you got to remember, you know, AIM was founded by a bunch of city Indians. And when they finally did get, you know, back to the reservation, you know, Crow Dog's dad basically told them, hey, you know, you need to get purified. So anyway, but yeah, Dennis is, I guess I just got the Yahoo Falls monument up. And kudos go out to Dennis Payne and Black Feathers and his wife and I guess some of our people are going to be going on Huffington Post's online TV show sometime here and haven't heard about when, but
oh, yeah.
So how's the weather out there and. You know where cannabis grow? Well, you got a tree out there. What is it? It's so tall you can't even tell it's a cannabis plant.
Not yet, but I'm working on it.
Okay. Yeah, I heard.
Yes.
I heard a legend of like a 40 footer. You know, that was so big it had bark.
I haven't grown a 40 footer yet, but I've grown some pretty big ones. The weather's really nice out here. It's way too hot. We got a bad drought going on.
Oh, boy.
It's going to be a bad fire year this year.
Wow. Bummer.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, well, we got well water and stuff where our grow is at, so we're okay, but other people are hunting.
For a while, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, California's in a bad way when it comes to water. I don't know. You know, and did anybody talk to the feds about maybe not letting, you know, a billion cubic miles of water escape into the Pacific just so some sardines can live? I mean, I can understand, you know, Mother Earth and all that kind of stuff, but people got to live too. And, yeah, it's unfortunate. But this is what, you know... This is what everybody was saying was going to happen, and
it's happening. It's bad.
Yep. It's my friend, the guy that wrote Tom Chittum, that wrote Civil War II. You know, he was saying he believed that things were going to start in the Southwest and, you know, California, and. Then eventually there'd be nationwide violence, and but yeah, you know, I remember talking with Ghost Wolf back when he was alive. They were very concerned at that time. They were saying, hey, you know, we live up here by Sandia, and here all these people are moving in, and you know, where's the water going to come from? And now we got a 100-year drought or whatever they want to call it, and saw a picture of. Jerry Brown. I mean, I just can't believe that guy's still alive, much less still a governor. It's just wild. And but he was standing in a place up in the Sierras where there should have been 5 foot of snow, and there was nothing.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it looked like.
And that was a couple of months ago.
Yeah,
and,
we got like no snow this year.
Wow.
Here in Hayfork, anyway, we usually get, you know, at least a couple of feet.
Well. You know, most people have said that, you know, looked at what Nostradamus said, I mean, this country wasn't named America, but it was, he may have referred to Hesperia or some, you know, some far-off land that you know, that's going to be very important someday, but he said it would be just basically people... thought he was saying that there would be a drought that would basically end the civilization and begin something new, and so yeah, it could get real bad.
Yeah. Well, doubts extinguish people and stuff before we found out life with tree rings and stuff. But, you know, if something don't change, California supplies a lot of the world's food. I mean,
yeah.
Or a lot of United States food. You know, so
you're
going to have to figure out something.
Oh, the Central Valley of California, and it's just crazy because, you know, back when L.A. was founded, I mean, the Central Valley, you know, it was basically just an inland desert, and the first U.S. cavalry units had to have camels to get across it, and
wow.
Then they started irrigating, you know, same thing the Mormons did in Utah, And he started, you know, irrigating, but then you're reliant on Creator, you know, for your water supply. And I know in Utah, you know, when they get a drought, they get pretty serious about praying their way out of it, you know, the church there. And but yeah, it's just. So the next time it rains and you wish it wouldn't rain, except it wouldn't rain on the weekend, or darn this rain, or I wish it, you know, why is it going to rain on the weekend, you know? Just think about,
we're,
you know.
Any
yeah.
rain.
Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, we're going to wait a few minutes and see if Pat Vegas will join us. And so anything else going on, Mike?
No, just getting ready to plant my weed, my cannabis.
Mm.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes on with that, getting the pots ready, getting the dirt ready.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet you're a very busy guy. And the check is in the mail. No, not yet. It will be.
I'm not tipping on that, Will.
Yeah.
$2,500, man.
But
I just
kidding. My phone. Actually, you know, Mike's a legal grower of cannabis, and participates in the California medical marijuana industry. And but he grows some legendary plants. I saw a picture. What'd you have? A 15-footer last year? Or?
Yeah, that one was 15-foot last year. I've had a 17-footer in my yard a couple of years ago.
Wow. Wow. So, wow, what would that be like? You get, you know, right there into the last few weeks and the buds are starting to turn color and then all you just need a good earthquake to come along and just shake it off. You just pick it up off the ground, right? After they're good and nice.
Yeah, it looks like
you got
easy.
You got the perfect weather for, you know, they say it'll grow anywhere that corn grows, but boy, you know, it likes it up where wine grows even better.
Yeah. Well, this is the Emerald Triangle. I mean, like the best
yep.
spot in the world as far as outdoor goes right here.
Yep. Yep. And, I guess in the legal commercial end of things, there's, and like in Colorado, you know, there's people that are beginning to move outdoors and look
yeah.
into better ways to grow it. And I'd like to see somebody, I've never heard of anybody growing cannabis using a technology called Sonic Bloom. You ever heard of Sonic Bloom?
It sounds familiar, but no, I've never used it.
Sonic Bloom is, let's see, there was a fellow up in Wisconsin who's now passed away, and I'll talk with his business partner, but I mean, this, the government of Indonesia basically considers this guy who's been nominated for Nobel Prize because he discovered that the sound of birds singing in the morning is what causes plants to open up their pores. And so he proved all this stuff scientifically. And And then he put the sound out on either Raw.
Someone?
Yeah, or he'll you know he'll couple it with different kinds of music. But basically, the only thing the plants will hear is this whistle that goes up and down like this. I'm not whistling too well tonight.
Yeah, I get the gist though.
Kind of like that, you know, da 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 da. But yeah, there's been some legendary crops of like tomatoes that were grown to this, and there was one guy that grew a tomato plant. He got sick and wasn't able to tend it, and they think it tore the roof off of his greenhouse. And it's unbelievable. I got a
basketball-sized tomato.
Yeah, well, but I got the CD when I was in Crestone, and you know was setting up our. We had a 35-foot greenhouse. We had a round house, and there's 35-foot south part of the house was greenhouse, and I was gonna run it in there because I had it all plumbed with. not hydroponic, drip irrigation. But anyway, well, yeah, I think we. I guess Pat's not going to show, and we've been here for an hour, and I'm sure. I'm sure we'll get together with him again, but appreciate everybody. Anybody got anything else to say before we sign off?
No.
Okay. All right, good deal. All right, appreciate you taking the call, Mike.
No problem. Call anytime.
We will see everybody next week. Good night now.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Join us to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Friends, this is your co-host Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. Wale washi yen, a te lo maki a yo mi a nam hene, a te na me chi ho o mi a nam hene yo wa. A shi ya che che che. As Blue Water, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
So that I may remember.